WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Oh, welcome to your Patriots Day edition of Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. Joined... at least the first hour of Monday Night Talk, none other than a fantastic co-host, also a proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk, Mr. Peter Brown.
Good evening.
What'd you say, President? How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. Doing real well.
Yeah.
We're already kind of sitting here, waiting, looking forward to our first guests, State Representative Josh Cutler.
Good evening. It's great to be here. I have to say, Kevin, you look very well for having run a marathon today.
I was going
to
say, you look very dapper yourself for somebody who did 26.2 miles.
No, I don't even want to let that rumor get out. I couldn't even do a 5K.
I would
right
one
now,
day so. Like to do a marathon.
I would too, but I feel
maybe
like
walk it, bike it, then we'll talk about running
watch
it.
Watch it. I'll start with watching it.
Well, I've already done that. I was actually pulling for a young man, the American who came in second by 21 seconds.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just why? Did you see the guy from Kenya? When he met the families afterwards from Boston Strong and stuff. They had him in the infield there, and he was talking to him on the way out. It's pretty cool. They had some pictures of him. It was awesome.
A gentleman, Galen Rupa, I think
Rupa,
that's the American. That's the American who came in second.
Yep.
He was kind of hanging in there.
I checked the BAA website. There was a lot of South Shore runners. So congratulations to all our listeners out there who were able to compete and complete. That's
any in the 6th Plymouth District?
Oh, yeah. There was more than 2 dozen.
Wow. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was true. I was impressed. I was very impressed. So.
Very fantastic. Yes. And I want to issue a small apology while I have a half a second here.
What did you do now?
I overbooked a little bit for this week. Popping in was... Arthur and David Boyle to do a little bit of a segment.
It's Pembroke night. This is great.
It's Pembroke. Well, it's kind of Pembroke night. We've got After Yourself representative coming up at 6:40. We have a gentleman running for selectman in Whitman. Randy LaMattina will join us.
Okay. Good.
And then the always boisterous Dan Pallotta, Plymouth County Commissioner.
Yes.
Will be coming in at that point in
time.
That's
appointment television or radio.
Oh,
right?
My goodness. Oh, my goodness. The guy's a handful every time he's in here.
It's a full house. A great
well, it is.
Oil
we aren't
going
to be sitting down and talking about goat milking techniques. That's
jeez.
But he'll be in here. We'll also speak with CBS Radio's Mike Riley, a good friend of mine. Kind of get his perspective on the Bruins and the Celtics.
Yeah, difficult Celtics game last night.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. Well, I mean, Isaiah Thomas, I mean, mourning the loss of his sister, China.
Yep. No.
It's kind of difficult. So
very difficult.
So that's something we'll have to keep an eye on. And then, of course, we have Mark Rocheteau will join us for a few moments. We'll chat with Mark about upcoming, I guess, there's a series of events taking place at Massasoit Community College, the Buckley Performing Arts Theater. One of them, of course... coming up the weekend of the, I don't want to say the 5th, 6th, 7th, or it might be the 6th, 7th, and 8th. To double check that. I'll have that correct when we have him on, but it starts with the show Grease. It'll be for one weekend, and there are other events that are going to be taking place the following weekends right into June. So we'll look forward to talking to Mark Rocheteau. He'll kind of do the co-host, and then he'll be the guest. That was kind of the thing. So, but I'll be happy. Of course, Peter will be back next week.
Yep. 27th.
The 27th, so we'll look forward to having Peter in to do, well, it's the 24th.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to that. And I see my next guest already kind of peeking around the corner, which is pretty cool, too, knowing that folks are here, ready to talk. Of course, Josh is going to be here kind of to talk a little bit about the...
What are we talking about?
FY 2018 budget. House 2, you guys finally got it done.
Yes, no, finally. It's right on time.
You guys finally got it done. I say that tongue-in-cheek, of course, but it's part of the process now. Now that the house is finished with it, now we wait for the state. So we'll talk about that coming
up. What's going on? After we take this break, right?
Over the past, 10 years, Brennan Smoke Shop's customers have given thousands of dollars in spare change to our local charity, the Nathan Hale Foundation. That money has been used for the Nathan Hale Veterans Outreach Center and Three Hearts Farm Veterans Growing Opportunities.
Hello, a tip cup in a smoke shop?
No way, it's not a tip cup. It's our cigar box charity bin. Brennan's customers, I repeat, Brennan's customers have donated thousands of dollars to the Nathan Hale Foundation, a registered 501c3 located in Plymouth and Middleborough. I'd like to thank all of our great and loyal customers for giving so much to this great and worthy charity. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping us help our local veterans. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and Pope's Island, New Bedford.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tocci.
Just a quick note, Kevin Tocci, T-O-C-C-I, at Kevin Tocci on Twitter. If you want to feel like following, please do, as we do our best to put out our programs on a regular basis as a podcast. If you've missed any of the action, any of the conversation, you just go to the WATD website, 959WATD.com, scroll down to Monday Night Talk, click on it. You'll find some of the latest podcasts. Joining us as we heard him chat a little bit before, Malcolm's traffic report, State Representative Josh Cutler, part of the State House report.
Yes, sir.
One of the many state representatives and state senators who pay a regular visit to Monday Night Talk and kind of talk about what's going on with their districts. And I had a chance to cross paths with you at one of your colleagues, the law firm of Cantwell, Cutler, and Coulter.
That's right. That's right. I had to leave a little early, but I heard you were terrific, Kevin. You stole the show, so
great job. I wouldn't go that far. They had a fantastic guy in Scott Wally.
Scott Wally, yes.
Scott Wally is fantastic.
Yes.
And Maureen Boyle, who's got a book coming out. Have her on here. Yeah. But had a chance to cross paths with you and Representative Cantwell. And the reason why I reached out to you this week instead of either one of those two gentlemen, because it's... was a Democrat's turn, was that I saw a blurb on your Facebook. And we know that the conversation, anytime we've had anybody in here in regards to the county, one of the big things that the county officials will say is that the state does not give back enough of the revenues that it takes and that there's a very unfair split. And I believe that you might have had something to do with a bill, whether you co-signed it, supported it. You'll be able to kind of give us all those details.
I can, Kevin, yes.
And there was actually a hearing on that, correct?
That's a great setup. Thank you. That's very correct. You are correct, sir. No, so you presented the issue very well. The county generates revenue from a number of sources, from the Registry of Deeds, when you pay deeds fees, and also when you sell a property, you pay the so-called stamp tax. You pay the deeds excise fee, and so that's generated at the county level by county employees doing work at the county level. But the state takes a significant portion of that fee. Currently, they take about 90% of it. In fact, so for every dollar that comes in deeds excise, only 10.6 cents stays with the county. So we think that's unfair. Originally, it was intended to be 50-50. So we filed a bill, House 1499, to, you know, not even to bring it back to 50-50, just to give the county a little bit bigger portion, which would increase their share to 31 cents per dollar. So going from 10 to 30% of the deeds excise fee. And the whole point here, Kevin, is to, you know, to help empower our counties to deliver more and better regional services. Because everybody, you know, that's the watchword is regional services, finding ways we can, through economies of scale, offer better services to our constituents at a reduced cost. And county government offers one great mechanism for doing that. And so if we can keep a little bit more of that aid, local aid here in Plymouth County, instead of sending it into Boston, then we can let our counties, you know, serve in turn, serve our communities and our cities and towns and the residents in them to deliver better services. And so it's really a local aid bill. And I, you know, I filed the bill and I'm pleased to support it. But really the credit goes to our terrific Plymouth County Treasurer, who's Tom O'Brien. You mentioned his name earlier.
That's correct.
One of my predecessors in the State House and still doing great work. And he's the one who brought this to our attention and has been a tremendous advocate for it. Came up to the State House last week to testify. And I can break a little bit of news and tell you that I had a very positive conversation with the chairman of the committee that it was heard by, and I think we're going to have a favorable report on it in the near future. So an important first step forward to hopefully a lengthier process that will see the county being able to keep a little bit more of the money that it earns. And again, I just want to be clear, it's not increasing any fee whatsoever. The fee is staying exactly the same.
It's just a matter of giving back the county, letting them keep a more sizable portion than what they're keeping now. As you said, 10.6 percent, or actually, it's what, at $10 and
it's 10%.
Yeah, it's 10% of whatever they're taking. And
yeah.
Is there a point of negotiation? Do you think that this could be something where it's going to be negotiated down from the 30%, or?
Sure. Well, you know, it's always anytime you're talking about revenue and trying to allocate revenue fairly and equitably, it's a challenging conversation because no one wants to be the one to give up any revenue. But I think, you know, Tom O'Brien has done a great job kind of corralling folks in other counties to be supportive of this and talking to some of our state leaders. So I think given that it's a fairly modest request, I mean, we're not asking for even half of the revenue we're asking for 30% of it, that there is a decent chance that we can see some movement. And, you know, I never want to make predictions, but I'm hopeful that we can make some progress on this bill this term. So,
hopefully is going to be part of the FY 2018 bill. Is this going to be standalone? How will this work if, in fact, it is voted on favorably?
Sure. So this is a bill that I filed along with a lot of my colleagues. In fact, I should say every single colleague in Plymouth County signed on to this bill, both Democrat and Republican. So this is a standalone bill. It's not part of the budget process. It's separate from that. Although, as you pointed out, we are in the middle of our budget process. And as the master of segue that you are, Kevin, I will just segue into that because that is other.
You wanted an excuse to go to it, so that's okay. Go ahead. Please do so.
At Kevin Tachi, right? That's the I'm following you on Twitter. That is what is. The primary focus right now is the state budget. As you pointed out, the House Ways and Means Committee released its budget last week, which I happen to sit on. And next week, the full House will be taking up the budget. So there's a lot of amendments that have been filed, some having to do with statewide issues, obviously trying to, we've done a lot of work and a lot of talk in the past about Chapter 70, trying to get more school aid back to our cities and towns. One of the things that our good friend, Representative Jim Cantwell, has been really championing, and we've been proud to support him on, is Talking Information Center, TIC. And I know that there's Peter Brown, who's here with us, has been a big booster of that, as everyone here at WAT.
I believe he sits on the board.
He beat me to the question. That's awesome.
So we're they've been facing some budget challenges from some potential talk of cuts at the state level. And so we're trying very hard, and Representative Cantwell has really been leading the charge at the State House to try to restore those.
And we don't understand why the problem we're having with Paul Sainer, and not to name any names, was that he just erased our name right out of the budget. Right. And we can't figure out why, and we haven't been able to get into him to ask why. And it's a federal grant that comes through his office that comes to us. And you've seen we just had the volunteer breakfast, and there's over 200 people that volunteer for this. I mean, it's the amount of money that we spend is almost next to nil, and we just couldn't figure out why he took us off.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Peter. And we had a meeting about this, I think it was now 2 weeks ago, with Commissioner Sainer and folks from Governor Baker's office, right, and all the South Shore delegation, Representative Cantwell again, put it together. And we had a pretty frank discussion about some of the issues you just mentioned. And I wouldn't say that everyone's in agreement on it, but we made our case pretty strongly that we feel, you know, pretty strongly about this and feel it's unfair that this cut has happened. So, again, it's too early to say. I think,
right,
you know, it's something we're working on, and we're cautiously optimistic that we'll see some positive movement on it.
What's good about it is that the whole legislative aspect of it, and I'm so sure, is all for it. So I appreciate everything you're doing for
it.
Yeah,
well, as you know, if Christine James is still listening,
yes,
you know, when you run for office and you come in and do your candidate's night here, one of the questions she asks you is,
TIC.
You gotta support TIC,
and
thankfully everyone always does.
Well,
and
I appreciate
it. We appreciate that, and we appreciate everything she does as well.
How about as far as anything else of importance? I'm sure a lot of constituents are worried about local aid, you know, whether it's Chapter 90 monies for road repairs and projects, Chapter 70 for education. I know it's a big thing in a part of your district. I know one of these split districts, Whitman and Hanson, they were looking to push for a larger annual assessment, finally coming to terms with...
and that's a... See, you're just the master here, Kevin, because we have another guest in the studio tonight who's running for Whitman's Board of Selectmen.
Yeah, I'll be all over Randy Lumbertino over there, too. So.
It's called a teaser, right?
It is a teaser. But no, I know that last year, yourself and Representative Jeff Deal pushed to get a larger per-pupil amount. Up from $20... to 55, right, you were successful?
Yeah, so this year, you know, it's every year we're obviously making our push to get increases in Chapter 78, which is how we fund our schools,
right,
at the state level. And again, you know, it's I hate to single out people because it was really a whole legislative delegation effort. We were able to get that number raised from this what's called $25 per pupil up to $55 per pupil. And that's something, again, we're trying to work on because of kind of the budgetary crunches that we're in, you know, that may not be realistic this year, but we've already seen an increase from $20 per pupil up to $30 per pupil in the House budget. So that was very welcome news, and obviously we'll continue to push that. And there's other accounts that affect local aid that we're working on. Something called McKinney-Venta, which is how we fund homeless student transportation. There's charter school reimbursement. There's a lot of accounts that impact our city and town budgets as our candidates for local selectmen, I probably already know. And so we're trying, you know, to do whatever we can to see more of that money stay in our cities and towns. And so that'll be the whole effort next week as we dive into budget week. And then the Senate will take it up the following month, and we'll have our budget, our balanced budget, hopefully by July 1st.
So. Any surprises or changes at this juncture of the budget, or is it just seem like it's a seamless process so far?
Yeah, no, I think it's what's been produced so far is a very fiscally responsible budget. It's actually $200 million less than what Governor Baker first proposed. So in terms of keeping that bottom line, you know, tight, I think the House has definitely tried to do that and try to be mindful that resources are limited. Mm. But at the same time, making key investments in areas that we all think, you know, I think we'd agree are all critical, you know, local aid, healthcare, opiate prevention. Those are some issues. We've definitely continued to invest, even in the past when budgets are really tight.
Sure.
And now that the, you know, economy is obviously doing better, we continue to prioritize. So I think overall, no budget makes everybody happy, but I think we've made some good strides, and it's a good budget.
How about in regards to revenue projections? I know there was something that we heard earlier on in the year. I know that's something that the House has to pay attention to, balancing as to what's taken out of the stabilization fund, if you're going to tap that or not. What's the plan of attack?
So
for
you know what we have, the state has what's called a stabilization fund or a rainy day fund. You might think about it.
Right.
And
good for bonding and stuff.
Yes, it's kind of one of those dull topics when you start talking about budgeting, but it's vital.
Important.
It's vital to our budget and to our bond rating, and that impacts our ability to borrow money, which then impacts what it costs us to, you know, to borrow the money, and it impacts the bottom line. So it is a key part of the process. And in Massachusetts, we can be proud that we have a sizable rainy day fund, stabilization fund. During the big crisis, the fiscal crisis several years back, we tapped into that to avoid you know, kind of drastic cuts. And now it's time to build that back up. And we need to do more to build that back up. And in this year's budget, we've changed the way we fund the stabilization fund to get more money back into it. We've added another $100,000. And we're also putting money back into our pension fund to draw down our pension obligation fund, which is another, you know, sort of long-term economic indicator that we want to be mindful of. So lots of moving parts, as there always is with the budget, you know, when you're talking about $40 billion. But again, I think it's something that, you know, as we move forward and try to make some improvements around the edges, but overall, it's a sound budget that's balanced and fiscally responsible and does invest in some key areas for to help provide services for our folks.
Now that we got warmer weather upon us, do we not have a celebration or a ceremony coming up in regards to a special part of Pembroke? Well, I got the two folks here. We got Peter Brown and the state representative. One of the state rep. Well, you would be the leading person who helped get
so
that.
So next month we'll be finally dedicating Tiny Brown Square in the town of Pembroke. I think we've talked about that on the show in the past. And Peter's dad, who was such a tremendous part of the community in Pembroke, but also the whole South Shore. And I know listeners out in WATD land certainly know the Tiny Brown name and all that he did for our community, not just his business, but his generosity as a benefactor. And it's just a terrific person. So it's very fitting, I think, that the entrance sort of to town as you come down Route 53 in Pembroke will be now the Tiny Brown Corner. It was always kind of known as that. Now it'll be official.
Well, now it's going to be the Big Dig will have a name. So, it's crazy. But no, I just appreciate everything you've done for us. It's going to be awesome.
Yes. We hope ATD will be there. We certainly want you guys to be part of that. And all the details we'll let you guys know.
You'll have to put Charles Matheson on it or something.
Yes.
Anything that you want to ask the representative before we say goodbye to him, at least for now?
When's your mom going to make me some more cookies? Those are awesome.
Well, she's all focused on her chickens.
She has a couple more
chickens. Yeah. And they weren't all laying eggs for a while, but now they're back. And so if anybody out there needs extra eggs, my mom has lots of eggs.
Those are good eggs. Chickens, so. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. And I want to take a moment to at least thank some of the folks in your district of Duxbury. Had a little bit of a scary event this weekend. I live in Duxbury. I happened to be at the ball game with former WATD anchor and reporter Steve Burns. And I was getting pictures from my significant other that we're having a little bit of an issue. I guess so. Wind kicked up while a neighbor was burning leaves.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually had fire encroach around our garage. Almost came within feet. And the Duxbury Fire Department did an excellent job in tackling that blaze. So I want to thank some folks.
I'm sure they appreciate that.
In our district.
We appreciate them. And it's been a tough, the wind has been tough. I've seen that sort of story happening a lot, unfortunately. So be safe out there.
As angry as I want to get at the neighbor, I was told that the neighbor did have, if he did pull a permit,
right.
That there was, he did have water in it, just the wind kicked up and there was nothing you could do. It just kind of jumped and went on.
Be scary. So
be careful if you're out there burning stuff. Representative, as always, we thank you for coming
in. It's always a pleasure.
Folks want to get in touch with you. They want to know about any of your in-district hours. How can
I'm
going to
plug my Twitter feed like you did earlier. So
please
it's
do
at,
so,
it's
yes.
at Josh Cutler if you want to follow along on Twitter and tweet at me.
You do some good tweets.
As hip as Kevin Tocci, but I'm working
on it. So is it at Real Josh Cutler? Is that what it is?
It's just at Josh.
Oh, okay. Just check it out.
There's not a fake one of me. Hopefully there won't be.
blue check mark at.
Thank
Representative,
you
thank you so
my
much
pleasure.
For coming in. Folks, coming up in just a couple of moments, Mr. Randy Limitina. He is running for selectman in the town of Whitman. He'll be here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tocci, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
All right, sorry for the delay as we are kind of shifting our guests. Josh Cutler exits. In comes Mr. Randy LaMattina. Randy, of course, is currently on the Whitman Finance Committee. Been there for 2 years.
2 years, serving as a vice chair of the committee.
And he decided this spring to throw his mighty hat into the ring.
Step up to the plate and
take a swing.
See if I can make a little advancement in town politics.
Yeah, what led you to be on the FinCom to start and get involved with town finances?
I would say public safety is what my background is in. I grew up the son of a Boston police officer, actually on the bomb squad. Was injured severely back in 1985. My father basically was my hero. I saw him almost give his life in defense of public safety, and carried me forward in my career. I was a professional firefighter for almost 11 years until, unfortunately, I had an injury, and 6 surgeries later and a few spare parts, I could no longer do that.
We can rebuild him. We can make him better.
They faster, tried. They definitely tried. And so while I was recovering, I really needed something to actually do. And it led me to the finance committee in town. And I have learned so much and very thankful for the opportunity I've had. And it's just been I can't say wonderful learning experience, but it has been a learning experience.
Yeah, this year seemed to be probably the most intriguing. As a member of your board, actually made this wild suggestion in regards to trying to help the school district meet its suggested assessed needs, which is it's a regular thing where the school district says, "Hey, we need this. This is our annual assessment. It isn't the total budget, but it's the assessment that they give to each town. And also, some of it is weighed as to." How many, I mean, right now, I would say the past couple of years, past number of years, Whitman has been the one that has more of the student population than Hanson. So, of course, with the added number, Whitman pays the bigger piece of the pie. But the assessment this year that the school district put forth was probably the largest I personally have seen in covering stuff in the two towns.
It was definitely the largest I've seen.
Double digit.
Yes. And when I was actually in the school committee meeting when they set the assessment, and I pulled out of the parking lot that night really just shaking my head, how were we possibly going to get to that number?
Right.
And before I got home, I was running through a lot of doom and gloom situations, scenarios of all the things we were going to have to cut. And I will say that we got very close to meeting their assessment this year with a lot of hard work, late nights, diligent work by every member of the finance committee. We got very close to, I think, a number that the school committee will be able to work with.
But you had a member who actually wanted to make some drastic cuts to the municipal side of the budget to be able to meet those assessed numbers. As a member of that appointed committee, I mean, what goes through your head when somebody makes such a suggestion?
Well, it's one thing to make the suggestion.
Another to act upon it?
And brainstorming. I mean, it happens. And he's not going to be the first guy to toss out an idea that's just going to flub. And certainly not going to be the last, like I said. But unfortunately, it got taken public, and you know, he's kind of been run through the ringer for it. I don't believe he has any intentions other than...
It was nothing malicious, but it was just an idea to be able to...
Right, and unfortunately, it got picked up, and people kind of ran with it, and he's paying the price now.
But now, again, learning that lesson from a mistake of another appointed official, I mean, going into an office like Selectman, you become... You're more so in the spotlight. These are meetings that... A video that are broadcast live. They're not just in a room with no cameras, like the FinCom, a planning board, or any other board in town. How do you transition from that board to another?
Well, you really just need to watch what you say, and make sure that you've run that through your head two or three times before it comes out of your mouth.
Right.
And I mean, we do have the most nights, unfortunately, on the night with that you're speaking of with the other member of the committee, there was a reporter in the room. But most nights we can kind of brainstorm, and it's not really picked up. But you really do need to...
Well, when you have a newspaper reporter right there, they're gonna tend to kind of collect all that information.
Right. And like I said, it's unfortunate for him. He's done a lot of very good work. He means well, and I think it'll be a learning experience, and more than likely the board will be stronger because he stays on it and he's learned from this.
So what are you doing? This is going to be it's a five-member board, two seats. There is one incumbent. There's technically one open seat. That's to fill the seat of Lisa Green, who actually is now the assistant town administrator. So, I mean, if you were to kind of say... Well, there are two open seats, but if you look at an incumbent, incumbents are usually successful in retaining their seats. So it's three folks vying for the one seat. What makes you the quintessential candidate to take that seat?
Well, I would say I'm going to be the guy that's going to be getting out there. It's not going to be a Facebook campaign, and it's not going to be a campaign that's done with a keyboard in front of me. I'm going to get out on the streets of Whitman. I'm going to knock on doors, and I'm going to make what I feel are very important issues known to people, how I feel about them, and I want to hear how they feel about them.
Peter, I'm sitting here hogging the whole time. Do you have any questions for our great candidate here?
It reminds me about when Alex Mizanson was in here earlier and talking about Abington.
Sure.
And that whole corridor, Route 18 and 27 and stuff, and all the development that's been going on in the town. How's that going to affect you when you run for office?
For us, we have a pretty good project going on 18 right now. It won't be up and ready yet, so I won't have to knock on any doors there. But
it's a paradise. Is it Paradise Gardens? It's a condo complex, right?
Yes.
Over by the.
It's the old Paradise Gardens. Whether or not it's still called that.
No, I think that's what it's called. I think they kept the name.
And other than that, 18 really won't be such an issue in Whitman, I don't believe. But that particular, it'd be great to have some more voters. And in a couple of years, they probably will be people I'll be knocking on the door to get their vote.
What are people saying to you in regards to when they know that you're running for office? Do you feel that people are educated on your campaign for office? Do people get confused that you're running for state representative and start asking you, oh, can you lower our taxes? And I mean, do you have people who know what they're talking about? What are some of the things that you hear from folks when you're saying, hey, my name is Randy, I'm running for selectman, I really would like your vote on May 20th?
People have been very positive so far. I think I've done some very good work on the finance committee, and we've come in with some budgets that have been very helpful in having been on the backs of people. Also, I get from a few of my friends, you're going to do what? I think most of us get that joking around from our friends. But it's something I'm very serious about. I care about the town of Whitman. I care about the quality of life issues that affect each and every one of us. I care about our schools. Mm. And I care about that Whitman is a town that we can be safe in.
Being somebody who's dabbled the past couple of years on the finance committee, you probably could give a better assessment than anybody. Is it time to do something about Prop 2.5? Is it time to update that model in which that taxes are taken from residents to be able to fund municipal and educational needs?
I think Prop 2.5 is a great kind of way to restrain government, the 2.5%. However, in a town like Whitman, we're really not facing a spending crisis where we are facing right now somewhat of a revenue crisis. And 2.5 is going to have to be something we look at maybe next year. But if that does come down the pike, then I think what we need to do is educate people. We need to be out there way ahead of it and do, lay some quality groundwork and let people know exactly why we need it. Be very clear and let them know. And I think that'll take a lot of discord and dissension out of it if you've educated people properly and they understand what they're going to have to pay for.
I believe that the town actually is going to be looking to do. Is there not a conversation about doing a Prop 2.5 for the fire department, that the chief is looking to try to bolster his department with manpower to be able to better meet the needs of the folks in town, especially when it comes to ambulance service and anybody who is in need of medical help?
That is correct. As of our last meeting, that will be the override. That's
$310,000, I believe, right?
$310,000, yes. It will be the override that will be on the ballot. We've sat in many a meeting with Fire Chief Greno, and he makes an excellent case for why he needs the manpower increase. I believe in 1965, they had 5 men per shift. And in 1972, they added an ambulance. They've kept 5 men per shift. They've never seen a manpower increase, and
the call ratio.
I think, if I can remember from his presentation, it was about 465 in 1965, and over 2,600 last year. So they've seen a significant increase in their call volume, but not only just call volume, the nature of the call, from what he says, is getting quite serious. He describes the patient of basically waiting to the last second to call, and it is a true emergency situation at that point, requiring the need for more men in the ambulance.
Other than financial issues in the town of Whitman, what do you feel are some of the issues that, if you have a chance to kind of just talk about them for a moment here, for any Whitman resident that might be tuned in, what are some of the other things that you'd like to tackle if you are elected on May 20th?
We need to get people more involved in the government, in the town government. When we're fighting to get 150 people at a town meeting, to me, that's a problem. And it really does fall on the shoulders of the selectmen. We need to make it more inviting. We need to get people into the process. Provide that transparency. And I know it's a buzzword these days.
Bring your keyboards to town meeting.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that also is an issue of we may go to electronic voting.
Electronic voting, yeah. Story here on WATD Today, yeah.
But it's just the involvement. We need people to be involved. Get to a meeting. Get the information. Don't get it on Facebook. Get your headline on Facebook. But if you want to do the research, get out there and you'll be better off for it, and you won't get the secondhand stories. And
well, what are some of the ways that you can get folks out? I mean, I believe the town has 10,000 voters, yet you have a small sample size of folks who have registered to vote who show up every year. You're lucky if you get 150, 200, unless it's about funding education, and then people will flock in. You'll have 400 or 500 people until that particular article is voted on, and as quick as they came, as quick as they leave. Just saying.
That is the truth. It's, you know, and it sometimes is very disheartening that, you know, until the issue is staring you right in the face, people just don't come out. I mean, recently with the medical marijuana facility, you know, by the time the ball had really been rolling on that is when people finally came out to voice their opinion. if, I mean, contact the selectman, contact the town administrator, and, you know, you put the car in drive, and that's the way it should be. Government works for the people, not the other way around.
Recreational marijuana ever become a talking point in town? Do you feel that everybody will not want anything to do with it in the community, even though there might be slight financial incentives for the town to do so? I mean slight.
I know I don't want to see it. You know, I know the selectmen, when they made the decision about having the medical marijuana facility, went by what the town voted in the legalization vote. You need to ask yourself, would that vote have been different if there was a little caveat in the question, but this is coming to Whitman?
Yeah.
So I agree with how they made their decision. I personally, recreational facilities, not in Whitman for me.
Peter.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to ask another question before we say goodbye to Mr. Lamatina?
Oh, he's doing a great job. Just
keep and I think what he's saying by that is if he lived in Whitman, he'd vote for you.
Yes.
Thank you.
If folks want to find out more about your campaign, you do have a social media page, right?
I do. It's on Facebook. It's Elect Randy Lamatina Selectman. Again, that's the Facebook page. And check that out. And we posting various things daily, and we also have a Meet the Candidate night coming up April 21st at Old Colony Brewery in Whitman, 7 to 10 o'clock, Friday night, April 21st.
Yeah, that's at their new location now, right? That's on Route 18.
Yeah, I believe it's 605 Bedford Street. So.
Very interesting. And do you want to at least recognize your family who traveled all the way here tonight? You want to say their name on radio so they go, Dad said my name on radio.
This is my high school sweetheart and wife, Michelle.
Hello,
and
Michelle.
Our daughter, Claire, and her friend, Hazel.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, ladies, welcome to Monday Night Talk. We wish you the best of luck, as we know you'll be out there knocking on doors over the next couple of weeks. Folks, get out there and vote. I believe it's, is it 9 to 5? 9 to 5, Saturday, May 20th.
Saturday, May 20th, 9 to 5.
Whitman Town Hall.
Come out and vote.
Come out and vote.
Exactly.
Make your voice heard. As always, sir.
Thank you very much, and I really appreciate you having me on, Kevin.
You got it. We're going to just kind of step aside. That completes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. When we come back, up next, Dan Pallotta, Plymouth County Commissioners, here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD-FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Well, I'm not a great one for introspection. The road I take, is the one most traveled. And, that's made all the difference. Here's an example. Driving along, I hit a pothole and a pot flew up and cracked my windshield. That's why they call them potholes.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Glass, where customer service is a family tradition. We come to your work or your home, we replace your windshield, insurance pays. My brother does a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Well, mister, fill in those potholes.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Well, thank you for staying with us for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. And we delve back into talking county issues, so to speak. I know we touched upon it a bit earlier on with State Rep Josh Cutler. We're going to kind of chat with a gentleman who has been in here a number of times. Previously, he wore the hat as the chair of the Plymouth County Commissioners. Today, he comes as just
County Commissioner.
That's Mr. Dan Pallotta, who's a good friend of the program. And I thought I'd give Dan a kind of an opportunity to kind of chat a little bit about the ongoing budget process, how that's going. And probably the conversation that's going on in regards to looking to restore the county commissioner salaries back to where they were several years ago when they were cut by the advisory board, and I think admittedly so, by the person who's sitting in front of me.
That's correct.
Dan, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Which is why I'm probably the only one who can speak on this issue with a straight face. First of all, I want to thank you very much for having me and being the first one from WATD to reach out to any commissioner to talk about this issue. We've been bashed pretty good for the past 2 weeks on the news here at WATD without having an opportunity to respond. And that's not like this station. The station's very inclusive, and I appreciate your opportunity for letting me come back.
Well, I did it as a talk show host, and because I usually have, I have a good rapport with the county commissioners. I can give you an opportunity, but you also, Dan, I know, let me show you, this is radio, so you folks can't see it at home, but show me, move all 10 of your fingers.
One of them's not working right, but that's okay.
But 9 of them still do, which means that you could have picked up the phone and also contacted our managing news editor.
I've done that in the past when Bobby Clark has done pieces like she's done. To no avail. So I'm not going to waste my breath. I've got other things that are more important. This isn't the first time that this has occurred. You listen to her pieces. They're one-sided. The first piece that she did was inaccurate, beyond inaccurate, didn't have any of the historical facts to it. So, but that is what it is. I'm here today to talk about the budget of the county and the successes of the county. And, we have, a group of people that are decidedly against the budget and correct, decidedly against restoring the salary of the commissioners, and that's their right to do so. I'm really disappointed in the town of Plymouth by binding their vote and not allowing their representative to sit through the debate and make a decision for himself.
But if I could circle back around, and I believe that's what would Bobby's, and if I could stand up for my call, at least defend her to a degree, I think that's what she was doing.
How can you defend her when she didn't even pick up the phone and call me?
Were you there at the meeting?
I don't have to be there at the meeting. She invoked my name. She invoked my name in her report. You pick up the person you're talking about and you give them a call. So you want to call?
But I believe it might have been. I'll check on this.
Ahead and check on it. And what you're going to find is going to be horrific.
Okay, we might have to get Christine James in on this conversation one of these times, just so we can kind
don't
of
make me take Christine down. Don't make me do it.
Oh, dude, you wouldn't stand a chance. Many have tried, many have failed, my friend. But let's get back to the conversation at hand. I know that it was many years ago. You guys are an entirely different governmental body.
What do I call the county? I call the county the bastard child of government. They don't like us from above, and they don't like us from below. But
understood.
We have a function that has to be done, and someone has to do it.
Right.
And the group of commissioners that are doing it right now have been doing a really good job for the past 4 years and cleaned up a mess.
But you have a biased point of view, being somebody who is on the county commissioners.
Actually, I don't have a biased point of view. I really don't.
Are you on the board?
I am on the board.
Then you would be. Then it would buy it. Then it would be biased.
If
you recused yourself from the conversation, then I think that it would be somewhere.
Well, that was done for me by WATD. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to the budget.
No. Before we go to the budget.
This is Josh Hill. I'm sorry. Good. I thought I was chairman.
For once, you were clairvoyant about this. Okay? And I want to make sure you don't forget my colleague here, my unofficial co-host for the evening and from time to time, Mark Rashto is going to pop a question in as well because he also is a resident of Plymouth County, and I'm sure he has a couple of questions. But I want to make sure that we at least, folks who are just tuning in, who may not be fully invested in the conversation in regards to what's going on with it, because it was many years ago that the advisory board cut the salaries down from $28,000 to $7,000 because they felt that there was more shenanigans going on with the board than them actually doing their job, right?
I was chairman of the advisory board. I led the charge for the cut. And
why?
I led the charge for the cut because the commissioners weren't doing their job. It wasn't about shenanigans.
No,
you said shenanigans. I won't qualify it as shenanigans. I would just qualify it as being not doing the job.
Okay.
They had sold the county farm with a deed restriction for $300,000.
They were selling off assets.
When the appraisal was worth $5
million. Okay.
They had sold the county courthouse for $800,000 to the town of Plymouth. When the appraisal showed it was worth $1.3 million. These are things that were unacceptable to me as a chairman of the legislative branch doing the budget. I understand the argument on pay and restoration of pay and why people don't want to pay, and I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that everyone seems to be having amnesia on, including your reporters, is that when we cut the pay, it was very controversial. It wasn't, you know, we went in and cut the pay. It was controversial. And advisory board members, including members from Plymouth and Kingston, and debated it. And they wanted to make sure that once the commissioners corrected the problems at the county, that the pay was restored. And that is something that I thought we were going to do in my first term, in my first year, to be honest with you. I ran knowing that I could restore the pay. I was the one who cut it.
But you have restored it part of the way.
We did.
You're
we,
up to 15,000 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we did okay. A partial restoration a couple of years back when we finally got the negatives to positives. But I wasn't comfortable with full restoration because the county wasn't in that good a condition yet. And I didn't think I was honoring the word that I gave as chairman of the advisory board. I gave my word that we would re-vote this. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to re-vote it. Unfortunately, Plymouth, who does have an axe to grind, you know, Plymouth's in a lawsuit with the county of Plymouth.
The county woodlot?
Not on the woodlot, on the landfill.
Yep.
You know, the town of Plymouth wants the county of Plymouth, the town of Hanover, the city of Brockton, to pay for their landfill. They used it from 1948 to 2015, and now all of a sudden they don't want to be responsible for it, and they want to just get up and walk away because the land is in our name at the county. And you know what? Pallotta's not going along with that. All right, so I'm fighting for the other 26 towns.
Okay.
Now, they don't want to give us the pay restoration for whatever reason. That's okay. That's their right. But for Plymouth binding Ken Tavares' vote is not democracy. He's not even going to sit and listen to the debate. It's not the right thing to do.
But Plymouth is just one member of 27 communities?
27 communities. 27.
You have a city and the rest of them are towns, so
right,
to speak.
Basically.
That are part of the contingency of Plymouth County.
Mm-hmm.
And just for folks who to know, because I've heard some reports, and it not just WATDs, but I've read stuff as well, and sometimes it's put out there that this is a pay raise. And not necessarily that is being restored. But then there's also the argument that there are individuals that were laid off due to a prior...
Let's talk about the layoffs.
No, let me finish.
I want to talk about the layoffs.
Let me finish what I'm saying here. Yeah. This is Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tocci here on 95.9 WATD. And, there could be an argument made that you look back for when you guys were deciding the fiscal 2017 budget that you did have to cut positions in the Registry of Deeds, which is a moneymaker for the county, and that folks feel that maybe restoring those positions, or at least attempting to restore those positions over pay raises, might be that might be tipping the scale in some people's
eyes. It was the 2015 budget midway that we did the cuts. The 2017 budget, we restored people to the registry. The 2018 budget, we're restoring two more to the registry.
Okay.
And I am going to tell you, the registry will be at full employment. Regardless of what anyone wants to say, it'll be at full employment. Yes, there were a lot of people that were laid off when we did the layoffs. Since then, the registry has done a wonderful job of reorganizing, and technology has kicked in. And we don't need that many people. We had 21 people at the Cooperative Extension 20 years ago, 25 years ago. 21 people at the Cooperative Extension studying cranberry, studying this, studying that. I have 4 at the Cooperative Extension. I'm not ever going to 21, ever. If you give me the money to go to 21, we don't have the reason to do it. Things have changed. So the argument that we need more people at the registry is not a valid argument.
I'm not saying that you need more. It's just a matter of if you're telling me that...
I'm telling you, with this budget in 18...
You're restoring those positions that were cut.
The registry is at full employment. As far as...
Full employment, or you're restoring the... To answer the question, because I can answer a question with another one, just to confuse things. Are you restoring the positions that were previously cut in prior budget sessions? Are you restoring all of them, or just what you need?
We restored what is needed.
Okay.
Some of the positions have been restored through outsourcing.
Okay.
We have a technology fund.
So you didn't say that.
Well, let's talk about it because it's important. Because all you people do is a one-sided thing here. Go listen to Bobby Clark again.
How did that get turned into
you didn't get the second side of the story.
I love
that. So you have an entire population in Plymouth that has not heard the other half of the story. So
The Dan Pallotta side of the story.
No, the truth. How about the truth?
The Dan Pallotta side of the story.
Okay, so
Dan, you do know I love having these conversations.
Of course. And I have a turtle shell. You can't say anything that hurts me. So if you go back to one of the problems that the registry had was we were having a hard time doing indexing, and that is putting things online to previous years. We just signed the final agreement to get us back to 1620. That was part of the work that a lot of those people were doing. So we found another way to continue that function. We did have a problem, and John had a problem, and he articulated it pretty well, with coverages at lunch, coverages during vacations, and these two people will alleviate that. We talked about part-timers, we talked about overtime, we talked about many things for the Registry of Deeds, and we settled on two additional people should be able to cover the registry. And although I know John, and I love John, John will tell you he needs 10. He doesn't. Since we did the 15 layoffs, I've gotten one call in 2.5 years. One call on a service problem. That was someone that was complaining that their land court document wasn't recorded quickly enough. One call. So clearly, there's not this huge service problem at Plymouth County's Registry of Deeds.
Mark, I'm sitting here hogging the conversation with Plymouth County Commissioner Dan Pallotta. Would you like to take a moment to do you have a question, being a resident of the county, in regards to this conversation? Again, because you articulate things so well when we have these cross conversations with different individuals.
Well, I guess my question is in regards to the positions or the amount of money that we're talking about restoring or not restoring. Are these full-time positions that we're talking about, or is it a part-time position?
Which are you, with the registry?
No. I'm talking about going back to the original issue.
With the commissioners.
Yes,
the commissioners. I would describe the commissioner's job as part-time.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't just describe it as full-time by any stretch of the imagination. Okay. The chairman works pretty hard.
Okay.
And we do have to go all over the county, and we do actually have to go up to the State House an awful lot.
And forgive my ignorance, only because, I mean, how many commissioners are there for?
There are three commissioners.
Three commissioners.
Right.
And is it a terms that they say?
Term of 4 years.
Term of 4 years.
One is elected during the gubernatorial cycle, and two elected during the presidential cycle.
They're staggered, so to speak. You see, and here's the other thing. I can see why you would have selectmen or town council or city council members who want to say, yeah, why do we want to raise? I mean, they're lucky they're getting anything, seeing that many of them, except for, I believe Brockton may be the only community that has paid members. I'll have to check that.
Plymouth's paid. Bridgewater's paid.
They get stipends? Okay.
No, I mean, you can make the argument.
But it's not much.
You can make the argument on... you certainly can make the argument on the level of pay, the stipend of pay, all, and so on and so forth. The fact of the matter is, the pay was $28,000 in 2009, okay? And in 2009, for the 2010 budget, I went forward and got the pay. And I want to give you some historical data because I want you to understand just how well your county commissioners are doing for you, because I know that you are a man that likes knowledge. So if you look at the state government in 2009-2010 to today, the state budget's gone up 41.6%. Same functions, just gone up 41.6%. The town of Plymouth has gone up 20.3%. All right? Their $250 million budget was 20% less when we did the cuts. The federal government's only gone up about 18%. Which is pretty interesting that Plymouth is outgrowing the federal government. The county of Plymouth's budget has gone down 2.6% in real dollars. These aren't inflation dollars, real dollars. Same functions, same everything. So your county commissioners are doing what you pay them to do. We cut the deadwood, we cut the political hacks, we cut all the problems out, and we've got the county running lean and mean. Furthermore, we've created new programs. Okay, this year you're getting an entomologist. Believe it or not, one of the worst problems we have in the county right now is ticks. Even in Brockton, we have ticks, okay? And we have a high Lyme disease rate. We're hiring an entomologist to help educate the Boards of Health on how to prevent tick disease and go to the schools and so on and so forth.
But isn't that something that the DPH should be doing?
I don't care who should be doing it.
Okay.
It's not being done, and our residents are getting sick, and the county of Plymouth's okay. picking it up.
Okay.
Okay? We're not making any money on this.
I got to ask these questions, Dan.
I got it.
Don't be hard.
I'm on my routine here.
Yeah, I know you are.
All right, 2 years ago, we created PCOT, the Plymouth County OPEB Trust. Every town has an OPEB liability. Let me tell you what the OPEB liabilities are.
Please do, Dan.
For just for Plymouth, the town, and Plymouth, the county. The town of Plymouth's actual accrued liability, all right, in 2009-2010 was $379,285,000. The county of Plymouth in 2009-2010 was $34,345,099.
Okay.
Guess what it is in 2016?
Please tell me, because I know you
will. Because I'm going to tell you. In the town of Plymouth, it's $567,828,203. In the county of Plymouth, it's $19 million. The county of Plymouth has gone down $15 million because we created PCOT. And we have not hired people. Where Plymouth is hiring people and giving raises, the county of Plymouth is holding the line. Your commissioners are doing their job. Now, back to the OPEB liability. PCOT last year returned to the cities and towns, selectmen that are listening out there, 18.57% after fees. If you put your money in with PCOT, you'd have 18% more today than you did 1 year ago. That's phenomenal. So we had $4 million that we had got from cities and towns. It's now $5,010,000 as of today. We're pretty excited about it. All right, so this is a big
I can see the excitement.
Yep, it's a big deal. Now, to you, it's a nothing because the average person doesn't understand what OPEB is. But OPEB is a promise made by the...
Tell them what the acronym is, Dan.
Right. Other post-employment benefits.
Thank you very much.
It's a promise by the residents of the 60s and 70s to employees that they didn't have to pay, that our generation's having to pay.
Correct.
And we're trying to knock that down so the next generation doesn't have to pay.
Well, Dan, we just got a couple of more moments left here.
Shoot.
But my last question to you, and then I'll give you an opportunity just kind of to kind of put it out there for any other, you know, elected officials who are pondering what to do in regards to the raise for your board.
Restoration.
The restoration. Right. Thank you. See, I want to make sure you're paying attention. Then you were. When you still have individuals that are questioning, and you've given things that you guys have done, but you still have people who are, you still have individuals who are going, well, do we need county government? What does it do? And you've given
those are different arguments.
I know those are different arguments. But they're gonna lump it in. What I'm saying to you, hold on, let me finish.
Hurry up with the question. You're on my time. Let's go.
And that is why do you want to poke the bear when you're still trying to put out goodwill and trying to show them what it is that the county is doing for them?
Commissioner Pallotta is not trying to poke the bear. Commissioner Pallotta is honoring his word as chairman of the advisory board. And if you know me, you know I don't lie. I tell you the way it is. If you don't like it, tough, vote against it. My advice to the selectmen is to come and listen to the debate and make a decision. You're representing your towns. Don't make a decision without all the information. There's a lot of information you're going to get at that advisory board meeting, and I think you should listen to it. Predisposing a decision is not democracy. That's dictatorship, and that's being practiced now by one town, and hopefully it won't be practiced by the other 26. I hope that we have a great debate on it, and we will follow the will of the advisory board.
And we just had a nice, healthy debate here, whether it's the coverage of what's going on with this particular issue or as to the understanding as to what your board has done since taking office.
Yeah, I mean, we've done some tremendous things. Unfortunately, the county's not a sexy thing where we can point to a new fire truck or a new school addition. No one really cares about, you know, what the courthouses look like. But we've done a lot of good. And it's unfortunate that we're the bastard child, as I indicated earlier, but we are. And we're working our tail off on behalf of the residents. Because if the county goes away, the liabilities of the county, which are tremendous, get transferred to you, the people of the other towns. And you don't get to pay it off over 20 years like we're doing. You get to pay it off in one. So we're doing the right thing by keeping the entity going and trying to serve the cities and towns. It'll be up to the residents as to what happens with our budget.
Well, Dan, I want to thank you for coming in to Broadcast House this evening.
And nice to meet your new co-host.
Well, he's by on again, off again. It depends on his busy schedule because he's a man of many talents.
Oh, so he wanted to come bash Pallotta.
I don't think he...
I wanted to come meet Pallotta. Get informed. Yes.
All right, there he is. Dan Pallotta, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you very much.
And as we take a couple of moments here to kind of let Dan kind of find his way out of the studio, I'll let you know that you are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Now joining us here, a good friend and a gentleman that from time to time, whether you're listening on the AM dial, you're listening to a WBZ News, Mike from time to time is the sports anchor, or if you're listening to the Sports Hub on the FM side, he's the guy who's weighing in. He's the guy with the championship belt. And he's got I think a similar, if not more so, love for sports entertainment. Loves wrestling, and we got Mike Riley on the line, Mark Rocheteau, which is it's always a privilege we can get Mike here on our radio program.
Love having you, sir.
So, yeah, honored to be here with you guys. I'll tell you right now, I didn't mean to step on you there, but honored to be here with you.
Well, and you know, we probably should start the program, seeing that we're just a week and a half, 2 weeks removed from the big annual WWE event, WrestleMania, and I think you were in the house for that down in Orlando, right?
That is almost like asking if the Pope is Catholic. Yes, I was there. and I'll tell you right now, we had a great time. It was at the Citrus Bowl, and it seated just over 80,000 people for the event. And you know, Kev, last year I went to Dallas for WrestleMania 32 at Jerry World at the AT&T Stadium. So it was really cool to do it 2 years in a row. And just a great time all around. And I didn't bring the belt. Did not bring the belt to Mania, Kev. It was just too much to carry around. But I did buy myself a championship belt ring, which I've been wearing on my right ring finger. And I really enjoyed that. So it's quite the souvenir from WrestleMania 33 in Orlando. It's great.
So you are legally wed to that.
That's it, my man.
Yeah. I mean, of the left finger, the left ring finger, of course, is for that spouse, but the
right
ring finger.
When that happens, yes.
The right ring finger is for those who love their exactly. special things, their sports. If I could just not to, because the main reason, folks, why Mike is joining us, I wanted to have somebody in the biz who covers this stuff, talking a little bit. The Bruins, after, you know, a couple of years of not making it into the Stanley Cup playoffs, they are in. And Boston Celtics, first time since 2008, being the number one seed. We want to get a chance to kind of get Mike's take on it. But I also know that he has that love for the WWE. What was your favorite moment during WrestleMania this year?
Wow. Well, did you guys watch it, first of all?
I did. I actually am a subscriber to the network.
Okay.
Don't tell anybody, though.
And if there's nothing wrong with that, you should not be ashamed of that. And Mark, did you watch it, too?
I did not. However, I did happen to work the WWE that's just here in Boston the other night.
Okay, yeah, that was really good. The SmackDown, that was a great show. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. All right, so I would have to say, guys, going into it, I thought that it would be an overhyped match just because of the two names, and I'm sure how long he'd be able to go in the ring itself. But I was really pleased with the Goldberg-Brock Lesnar match.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, I mean, I respect Goldberg coming out of retirement, being almost 50 years old. He was Universal Champion. And Brock Lesnar, I think he's the most prominent guy on the roster. And he's a draw. He's going to get you a sellout every time. And I just saw what he did with the 10 suplexes in a row and the F5 and reclaiming the Universal title. I thought that was my favorite moment right there. And that's always an accomplishment at WrestleMania when the belt does change hands. And to have two big powerhouses like that, that was my favorite moment. It would have been, I'll tell you what, would have been my favorite moment at the Undertaker beating Roman Reigns, because Taker is my favorite of all time. It was very bittersweet, you know, seeing him walk away in the sunset there. But that would have been my favorite moment right there. I mean, it's just hard to say that it was, because I was not rooting for Roman Reigns. I was a Team Undertaker the whole way.
Yeah, and I'm the same with you. I mean, I was, you know, from his inception as Mean Mark to...
Yeah.
You know, that deadly walk on the top rope with the heart punch to, you know, being, you know, somebody who was teamed up with the pallbearer and, ooh, you know, that dynamic of, you know, this individual, you know, when they would have the casket matches and, you know, just the euphoria around him and kind of... That's the wrong guy. That I like. I kind of like Roman Reigns, but I just don't. I don't feel that he's of that stature that you would want to, you know, put him over as the guy that this is his yard now.
Right, and I think that from what I heard, that the Undertaker wanted John Cena in the match.
Right,
but that kind of changed gears right before the Royal Rumble, and like you were saying, Kev, that. Roman Reigns is the next guy here to you know, have the Undertaker put over. That's the plan. The plan is for him to be the face of the company over the next, you know, 7-10 years, whatever it is.
Is there someone better, Mike? Is there someone better? Because the fans don't even receive him. I mean, he's at that point where you look at Cena and all that Cena has accomplished. I mean, you would figure they would have made him.
That would have been awesome.
They would have made him heel by now, but because he does so much for Make-A-Wish, he doesn't want to go that avenue, so he kind of stays at that mid-level where there are those who hate him and those that love him. And I kind of think in early in his career, Roman Reigns is that kind of a guy that the fans aren't taking to and they're not cheering for, you know?
And the problem with Reigns is that the WWE is a year late on Roman Reigns. Yep. That Royal Rumble, I think it was 2014 or 2015, the one that Batista won, and him and Roman Reigns were the last two in the ring. And here's Batista coming back as a part-timer, and he wins the Royal Rumble in Philadelphia, knocking out Reigns last minute, got booed. That was Roman Reigns' Royal Rumble to win right there. And what they did was, you know, fans would have embraced that, they would have loved him, and now they're a year late on him. So instead of giving him that moment right there, now, a year later, where people have rebelled against him, they're stuffing it down our throat that, hey, here's your guy. This is what you wanted.
Right.
But no one is going for that now, and that's the problem. And I just think that he is not the guy for right now. And to turn him heel would be great. But we'll see. I think The Undertaker, Cena, would have been a great match. And in fact, I would have loved to have seen it next year, if The Undertaker's even physically able to do it. I mean, his hip, he needs a hip replacement, and you know, I would have loved to have seen that, but a retirement match between both of them, Taker and Cena, retirement match, loser retires. That would have been great.
Yeah, they would have been great, and it's great talking. Just to start off our conversation, a little WWE. As you know, as I told you before, as we were setting up our conversation here tonight, that we're going to have Bobby Backlund here. Crossface Chicken Wing. I loved seeing him at the Garden as a, you know, the WWF champion back in the day before they decided that, you know, before Vince McMahon Jr. came on board and was like, you know, they wanted to find a way to get the title to Hulk Hogan. Oh yeah, brother. And you know, so we're going to look forward to talking with him next week. You've already said that you might even pop in. Just to say hi to the guy.
I'm going to change my plans, baby. I'll be there. I'm very excited to come down for that one.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he was supposed to be on with me last week, but something happened And he's all like, I'm going to drive up there. I'm like, no, just call, dude. He's like, nope, I'm driving up. I'm like, wow, that's
awesome. And he's a Connecticut guy, too. He's a local guy.
He's like, it's only 100 miles. So we'll look forward to at least saying hi to you next week in regards to talking WWE. But with the remaining 10 minutes we got with you, give me your thoughts. It's a sports guy, a guy who works for a sports radio station, the euphoria that the Bruins have made it in. While they have their a number of walking wounded on on the defensive line, you see the introduction of Charlie McAvoy, and then you talk about the Boston Celtics, who are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, who are taking on the Chicago Bulls. Give me your thoughts as somebody who covers sports for a living.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Kev, for the Bruins, like you said, with Charlie McAvoy to just step into that first game there on last Wednesday at Ottawa with the win there. And, here's a guy where he said even going into the game that, I've looked up to these players and what an honor it is to play side-by-side with them and be on the same shift with Zdeno Chara and so forth. A guy that came right from college, where BU, as you know, for years has been an unofficial minor league farm system for the NHL. And to go through that there with McAvoy and make a deep run in the NCAAs this year, and then a month later to get called up to the team that drafted you, let alone your first game, a playoff game, you're literally being thrown right into the fire. And to do what he did, I thought there were two great opportunities in the first period of Game 1 for Ottawa. In fact, one was a breakaway. I believe it was Carlson who had a pretty good shot, but McAvoy, just the way he kind of went in to make a defensive move, go right up against him, he pretty much saved at least one or two goals from getting on a Tuukka Rask early in that game there. And, that's the one the Bruins won. So I think he really showed his colors early and definitely one of the three stars of that game. I hope the pressure is not on him here, going over hype, but this is incredible, really amazing. Walking wounded defenseman, as you said.
Yep.
But this is... I'm really excited to see his future, Charlie McAvoy. Really, really excited.
Now, you're listening to some of the folks. I'm a fan of Felger and Maz. I tune into them. I like Michael even when he was across the street and he'd hang out with Glenn Ordway and talk. And, he would be that polar opposite at times.
Right.
But they haven't been, they haven't been all that on board with this Boston Celtics team, with the thought that, are they deserving of the number one seed, and how disappointed will Celtics fans be if they don't at least make it to the conference finals?
Yeah,
is that attainable?
And that's the other thing, too, here, Kev. Brad Stevens, with all due respect to him, very good coach.
Yep.
And how many games has he won in a playoff series with the Celtics going into this year? How many playoff games has he won?
I don't think he's won any.
They won. They won one last year.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Hawks beat them in five. That was it.
Yeah.
But, that's fine. But the point is, though, the fact that you're already expecting your team to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, having just won one playoff game, and, the Eastern Conference, it's definitely not the West. We know that. And the Celtics, what did they win, 53 games?
That is correct.
Yeah, you get the number one seed, which is great. Do they deserve it? If you win 53 games and if you overtake Cleveland and Toronto and Washington, then yes, you do deserve it.
Hmm.
But are you capable of being the number one seed? That's where I have a major question mark, and that's where I don't really feel too confident with the Celtics. In fact, at this point, the Bruins, if you're going to compare both teams, the Bruins got a big break getting that three seed last week, not getting matched up with Washington in the first round. I think they have a better chance of going deeper in the playoffs than the Celtics.
Amen.
And I just think the Celtics could be saying goodbye after the first round. They could to Chicago. But I think they're going to get out of the round. I really do. However, if you're going to be making it to the semifinals there, I don't see them matching up well with the likes of Toronto and Washington, for that matter. Even Milwaukee, if you're going to draw them at some point. I'm not really confident as we go deeper into the postseason for the Celts.
Okay. And again, we're speaking with CBS radio man, Mr. Mike Riley, who you can hear on the AM side with WBZ. Also, you can hear him on the Sports Hub, just a couple of clicks up the dial. Mark, I'm sitting here hogging all this conversation with Mr. Riley, with Mike. Is there something you want to kind of
interesting in that analysis when you talk about the Celtics and the Bruins together. I've kind of been watching out of the corner of my eye. I haven't been too focused on the Celtics and the Bruins as they came in. I kind of shut off after March Madness. But I kind of felt like the Bruins might actually, the Celtics might actually go deeper than the Bruins, because I felt as though the Celtics had more of a fire going into it. Is there anything that the Celtics you feel they can do at this point, can rectify that situation and maybe to help themselves deeper in?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know what, you go back to trade deadline where Danny Ainge didn't make a move,
right?
And they literally stood pat. With all the stuff that Isaiah Thomas has done here the last couple of years, I'm not taking anything away from his talent, but that's not a guy you build a team around. You just don't. You can't do it. Mm. And that's what they've done here. They need a franchise big guy. We haven't had a big guy since Kendrick Perkins, which is, what, 4 or 5 years ago now at this point.
Right.
We haven't seen that. Al Horford, yeah, he's a big guy, but he's a 4. He's not a 5.
Right.
And I just don't see them going too deep there. You're not going to have any presence. I mean, not saying they have no presence with the offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, but with the lack of experience and so forth, and no real, you know, big guy down there, I'm not feeling confident with it.
Right. So no Celtic magic this year then?
Yeah, I'm just not feeling it. I think they went in very overhyped. They're going in really overhyped.
Right.
And you compare them to the other teams, especially in the West, they're a soft team.
And Mike, I got to throw this out there. You mentioned Al Horford, and yep. You know, the Celtics, that was the big offseason acquisition. And you actually, what did you actually net last year? You won 48 games without Big Al. You only essentially won 5 more games, adding him to the mix.
5 more with Horford. You're right.
And
I'll even go a step further too, Kevin.
Please.
Not only is that the big acquisition last year, but that is the number one free agent signing of all time in Celtics history, right. If you can believe that. You know, for years they've made deals to trades at the drafts and all that. The number one free agent signing before Al Horford was Dominique Wilkins. So that's the draw right there. And, yeah, 5 more games with Horford, but he was out for a little bit early in the year. I just think that with him, he's good, but there's too many point guards on this team. You got Terry Rozier, you got Jaylen Brown, Jordan Mickey for that matter, too. All these guys, the young guys, and I didn't see any trades at the deadline where I thought they could have made a move for a big guy to help out Horford, and they didn't do that. And that's where I'm very cautious and a little worried about that as they go deep in the playoffs to make a run here.
Yeah, and you look at, I mean, right now, potentially they have the Brooklyn Nets number one pick. Well, again, we got to see how the ping pong balls, how they fall in favor. And we have the draft lottery. I mean, it seems as though the Celtics have been snake bitten over the years. I mean, by rights, they should, you know, with the number of weighted balls, should get the number one pick. I guess it's this year's the one that they can actually choose to swap draft picks with the Nets, right?
Right, and they get and they also have 25% chance of the number one pick, and that's the highest,
right?
Right there. But again, I mean, coming out of the draft again, Kevin, it's all point guards.
Yeah,
and they don't need the point guard.
They
need a big man. You know,
need a body.
So that could hurt them here. But again, that's where I'd make a move. I don't know. Felger says it all the time, and Maz, I make fun of the Celtics fans a lot. Like, don't you want to win a championship? It's like, oh, no, we're happy. We're going to have a championship every 20 years. Give me something. I mean, it's like, wouldn't you want to be a little more aggressive? Everyone's happy about everything. I'd be furious. Make a move, you know?
So what I need from you now, Mike, to close out this segment successfully. And that is, A, how far, how deep do you think the Bruins are going to go in the playoffs? Two, how far do you think the Celtics, and this is your chance to be that sports prognosticator, kind of give us your Nostradamus-esque guesstimation as to how far they'll go. And also, I believe that they had the big the swap around between Raw and SmackDown. And our girl, our girl Charlotte Flair, I think has been shuttled over to SmackDown, their their roster. How many days before she is the she is wearing her fifth championship belt?
Wow. All right. Those are my,
those are big.
These are some big ones. So I'll say with the Bruins, I think they get out of this series with Ottawa. In fact, they win in seven games against the Senators. I don't think they're going to make it out of the next round, whether they're matched up with Montreal or the Rangers. If they do get Montreal, you know, Claude Julien is going to be throwing everything but the kitchen sink at his former team.
Right.
Even the Rangers, for that matter, I just think they have a too much strong goaltending with Lundqvist, and they get a really good all-around team. I don't see them matched up well with them. So pick your points on one of the two. I think one and done for the Bruins. That's it.
Okay.
The Celtics here, I get them winning this round against the Bulls. In fact, I get them winning in six. But then after that, who would they be matched up? I'm trying to think here.
Depends on how it shakes out.
Yeah, that's right, because it's all the bracket. I think the Celtics would not make it out of the Eastern Conference semifinals. If they're going to get Toronto or Washington, they don't match up well again.
Nope.
I mean, look what Washington did earlier this year when the Celtics were there.
Yep.
They dressed up in black for a funeral to shut the Celtics down, to give them their head, and they got them. This is a team that got in your head because of a freaking funeral there.
Yep.
Toronto, they don't match up well with Toronto. And Cleveland, you can't handle them in a seven-game series. So if you get one of those three, that's it. And I don't know why the expectations are so high to go to the conference finals, even though you're the number one seed. It's just I don't see it happening. So one and done for both the B's and C's this year. But however, they both made it, and I give them credit. So you can't really knock them too much.
And?
Lights out early at the Garden last year, not this year.
Okay. And?
Charlotte, right?
Yes.
So, she did make the move to SmackDown, which is huge.
Yeah.
Huge for the show.
Yeah.
I think that Charlotte is going to win the SmackDown Women's Championship at the next SmackDown pay-per-view, which is Backlash. And that's in Chicago, I know, for that matter. She's going to win there. And then I think after that, you're going to see a little push with Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch would win back the title at SummerSlam over Charlotte. So, see those two feud right there.
Who you have had a chance to interact with not too long ago.
Yes. Mm. Yes, indeed. In fact, Kevin, both signed my championship belt. And when I come in to meet Mr. Bob Backlund, I hope he's available to sign my belt, too.
I'll make sure it's a request that I make on air. This way we have it on record that the Mike Riley is going to be in to have his championship belt signed.
Now, the rule on that belt is only champions or former champions that belt. So that's the rule on that. And as you know, back on former world heavyweight champion and Hall of Famer as well. So, yeah, that would be awesome.
Right. And who is he? He was the longest WWF. He held that title almost as long as, who held it longer?
Buddy Rogers?
No.
Bruno
Sammartino, that is correct.
Bruno Sammartino, yeah, and then Iron Sheik had it for a while, too.
Yeah, blink of an eye. Then they gave it over to, oh, yeah, brother.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Gave it to Hulk Hogan with a leg drop, so to speak. Mike, I want to thank you so much for joining us. If your fandom wants to get in touch with you or they want to follow you and some of the stuff you do, how can they do that?
Yeah, Twitter, blue check mark at Sarge985, right there on Twitter. Hit me up. Love to communicate with listeners and, you know, chat away. And, you know, Kev, every day, whatever we do, if there's something positive, if you guys see a good story, we'll give a Sarge salute of the day.
I was going to say that it has to be worthy
Yeah, exactly.
Of the cyber
salute. But can you guys do me a quick favor, though? Do me a favor?
Yes.
Can you just put your right hand up at a 45-degree angle right by your right eyelid there?
It's radio, but I'm doing it.
I'm sorry, what's that?
It's radio, but I am doing it.
There you go. Good boy. Very good. And give yourself that salute sign, and there you go.
Ah.
There's your Sarge salute of the day, baby.
You are the best. There he is, the one and only Mike Riley, and hopefully we'll get to hear him for half a second next week if he happens to pop by to say hello to the WWE Hall of Famer, Bob Backlund. Mike, until we meet, have yourself a great evening, my friend.
Gentlemen, you as well. Thank you so much.
And we're going to step aside just for a few moments. And when we come back, I promise, the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we return for our final segment here on this Marathon Monday, Patriots Day. And a gentleman who has been my unofficial co-host at least for this portion, this hour of Monday Night Talk, Mr. Mark Rushto. Well, actually, he will convert into, and he's done this before, I think. We did this a couple of months ago.
Back for a miracle on 34th Street.
You convert from being the co-host to being in the guest chair. Very interesting.
Let you make it so comfortable. No worries. No worries. Thank you for having me.
But we have a great flow, too. I enjoy our conversation, and you're a renaissance man. I mean, what don't you do? You know,
I don't do windows.
Yeah, and you're one of the few people I know that like snow.
Love snow. Yeah. I appreciate the change. That's
I see. I like the snow too. And then people are getting all kind of grumpy.
I've done the California Dreaming thing, and when I got out there and I didn't have the change of seasons, it kind of irked me a little bit. And now that I'm back and loving it, I appreciate it all the more. So, and the other thing about snow in New England, it goes away.
Yeah,
don't forget,
it disappears.
Yeah, look at that.
It makes you appreciate the warmer weather. Complain less,
there it is,
so to speak.
There it is.
Because that's the one thing that I say to people. Hey, you know, there is the alternative come January, February. So keep that in mind. But we have you converting from the co-host to the guest in honor of Massasoit Community College celebrating its 50th anniversary in existence. And you're doing so with the show Grease.
Big goings on. And actually, not only are we doing Grease, but we have a spring series that we're floating out there. We do have Grease, which is the first weekend of May 5th through the 7th.
Yep.
And then we have the Trial of Matty G the following weekend, Thursday through Saturday, which is a modern retelling of the Greek tragedy Medea. And then for the official Massasoit Day 50th anniversary celebration, we're going to have a concert on Saturday, June 3rd at 7:30, featuring Shirley Alston Reeves, who was the lead singer for the Shirelles, and Mr. Tom Rush.
We had Tom Rush. We actually had him on here. We had him on the program.
I know. Great guy.
Yeah.
Supporter of, he's a wonderful, he is the consummate singer-songwriter,
yep.
But he helps out the little guys around the area, no doubt.
Yep.
And then we're going to wrap.
And this isn't his first time at Massasoit either.
No. And he was.
But this is a return performance.
This is. And he was a staple of Massasoit back in the, I want to say the 80s and 90s, where he did a series of performances over a short period of time. And then for our, to wrap it up, in June, on the Sunday, June 11th, we'll have Radio and TV Classics Live making a final return, so I'm told. And that will feature Mr. John Astin from the Addams Family. So a little bit of everything going on.
John Astin. I mean, I'm not only from that TV show, but John has been in so many different things and also did the game show circuit.
Yeah.
Recently, I'm a big fan of... Buzzer TV, I've seen him on Password.
Sure.
Plus.
Yeah.
So, great guy.
Wonderful guy. And I can't wait to meet him and work with him officially on Radio Classics on Sunday, June 11th. But more immediately, we do have Grease coming up Friday, May 5th through Sunday, May 7th. And unfortunately, usually we do our shows for two weekends running, but this is a one-weekend performance for us.
What is the challenge technically to be able to do the one show and then you're immediately looking to do, when's the next show after Grease?
In Madea, the Trial of Madeline G, based on Madea, will be the following weekend. So we're physically going to flip that stage in
Wait,
one
did,
week.
Did you clear this through Brian Willis?
I had to talk him down from the ledge.
Did you have to?
I had to talk him down from the ledge. There's no doubt about it.
No, because I know he's your master guy, the tech who,
Who
does the great things with that theater and transforms it.
We have a wonderful team, and Brian's definitely a cornerstone, along with Jen and Nathan.
And I was going to say that Jen Spagone, who's going to have to go from one set of costumes to another.
We are stretching. There's no doubt about it. However, we lined it up such that the designs for or the look of Grease will work right into the Trial of Madeline G. But we're excited. We're earmarking Grease as Massasoit Theater Company's 50th anniversary production, and we're really excited about the performance. We have a great cast in, and Grease is just a fun show all around. You know, it's a recalling of the Buddy Holly days and the
1959
Chuck Berry,
right,
Chuck Berry who just passed away. All that greatness is reflected in what I consider to be probably America's most loved musical.
Some of the folks who are helping to put this on, whether it's directing, choreography, whether it's the music.
Sure. Mr. Adam Joy is our director and choreographer extraordinaire. And Adam comes from a theater education background, so we're honored to have him direct and choreograph on our stage. And then Mr. Eli Bigelow is doing our music direction, and also from a musical theater education background. And he is just a phenomenal asset to the production team. And then we have Jen Spagone on costumes. We have Brian on sets, and it's just the team is just really succinct. And I think that it's going to be another great show for Massasoit.
Talk to me about how folks can find out. Again, you not only talking about Grease, but you're talking about a number of performances, May and June.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Easiest way to find out information, other than calling 508-427-1234 to get tickets from the box office.
You can go right online to massasoit.edu/box office. And if you can't remember that, just Google Massasoit and box office together, and the link will come right up. And all the different shows will be listed there with the buy ticket buttons at your disposal.
Google is your friend. When in doubt,
Google.
Google. You can always Google to find out. Who are some of the key folks that are in this performance? I mean, key roles, of course, Danny and Sandy, and then trickle down from there.
As Danny, we have Mr. Michael Bradley. He is recently coming off a local fame as the Beast in Beauty and the Beast over Bridgewater State. As Sandy, we have the ever-brilliant Hannah Lazat. She is phenomenal. And just completely embraces we have iconic imagery of these characters, obviously through the film and whatnot. And Hannah really knocks out the vocals. I happened to hear down the hall her rehearsing, and I was just, I had to stop what I was doing and just enjoy her performance. So something definitely worth taking in. And all the vocals across the board, it's going to be great.
And I just wanted, we're sitting here talking about some of the folks who do stuff backstage, and we'll just throw out some love to Gail, Casey, Pat, Aaron, Thomas, just to name a few, who are also somehow, some way, whether they're doing lights, whether they're stage managers, or doing props and lighting. It's a interesting show, and want to, of course, give them a little bit of a love. And I see a couple of familiar names, Teresa Cappuccioni. Who doesn't love Teresa? And a good friend, the Kipper himself, George Kippenhan. starring as Vince Fontaine.
It's funny because Teresa, I'm honored to have her obviously back on our stage.
Absolutely.
And she is just a spitfire as a personality anyways. Yeah. And she's playing the principal that we all know and love. And,
really?
Yeah. And of course, George Kippenhahn, Vince Fontaine. I mean, come on.
It's a natural. It's almost like being Rooster and Annie.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, you need that iconic figure.
Definitely.
So to speak. Well, we're just about out of time. But folks, hey, if you're looking for a show to check out, if you're looking for entertainment, you don't want to drive all the way to Boston and pay. Well, you know what? You're gonna get what you pay for tickets, but then it's parking. You know, that doesn't come with it. With Massasoit, there's no, you don't have to pay to park.
It's a reasonable night out if you yes. want to go out for dinner and come see a show and not bust the bank.
Amen.
The Massasoit Theater Company is here for you, and we're happy to provide, whether it's Grease, The Trial of Matty G, the Massasoit Day Concert featuring Shirley Alston Reeves and Tom Rush, or Radio and TV Classics Live, we got it going on this spring.
$18, that's the general admission. Unless you are a student or a senior, $16, and they also offer discounts for groups of 10 or more. So if you're somebody who's part of the Red Hat Society or someone like that, please make sure you get your tickets and pick out your shows accordingly, as they do feature these shows. Just a quick note, though, at least for Grease coming up, 3 shows only, a Friday and Saturday, May 5th and 6th, 8 o'clock. Sunday is a matinee on May 7th. Mr. Rashto, I want to thank you very much for helping me be not only a co-host this evening, but also kind of give our listeners the details of these great upcoming shows taking place at Massasoit Community College. This is the Brockton campus, Route 27. Remember, Google is your friend. You want to find out in regards to shows coming up.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield.